This is Sunday, June the 16th, Sunday morning study on the Ledge Bible Contradictions. I believe we had got down to the second one, that God is omnipresent. And again, a lot of this material we go over, a lot of verses we have already used, and some of these contradictions are so closely united or related that we'll probably double up on the verses that we look at. But omnipresence means that Christ or God is everywhere at all times, that He never sleeps, that we have studied in some of our past lessons, that He never sleeps. He sees all, He knows all, it goes on all the time, as we refer to time, which time is nothing to God, but we refer to it as time, that God never sleeps, either morning, noon, or night, but He's always present, knowing what's going on. Matthew chapter 28, in verse 20, that God is everywhere, Christ is everywhere present. Blaine, if you will, read that, please.
Teaching him to observe all things I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age.
Right, Christ is here talking to his apostles. He's shortly to ascend back to the Father, and he gives him this commission that we refer to, that they go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Then he makes his statement that while they are doing this, lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age or to the end of the world. Again, making reference to that he's always present with them, regardless of where they are at. But the same application applies to his children today, that God is always with us, Christ is always with us, regardless of where we're at, even in this assembly this morning, that he's always present. So he was going to be with the apostles in all the days of their life here upon the earth, and even to the end of their death, that he was going to be with them. And then he gives them assurance of his spiritual presence with them in the execution of the commission here upon earth, that I will be with you, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you. So he was always with them in their travels or wherever they taught or preached the gospel. And the purpose behind this would be why? Why? Why would Christ make this statement? Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age.
Just encouragement.
Encouragement, okay? What would they go through? What was already foretold was going to happen to them?
Persecution.
Death. Death.
So they understood, not like we do, but they understood some point about their future. That he was told to them. And so this assurance or this reassurance of what they were doing, that he was going to be there. And they had the assurance that when their life come to an end, that the blessings and the reward for that would be heaven. And so it's just a reassurance. It's the purpose, as Larry talked, of strengthening their faith, that his guidance would always be there. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Again, in the writing of the Hebrew letter, like I mentioned, that we have this assurance today that God is always with us, Christ is always with us, but it depends upon our relationship with Him, okay? Hebrews 13 in verse 5, let your conduct be without covetousness, be content with such things as you have, for He has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And so it's a promise that we have this reassurance, much like the apostles did, that he's always going to be there. And that when death comes upon us, in what means, or where we just simply die or sleep, or some tragic accident that happens sometimes, that we have this assurance that we have a reward. And so it's something that we should be looking forward to as far as the reward that we conduct our lives each day. Mark 16. Again, the same time that Christ is talking to the apostles shortly before he is to ascend back to the Father. Mark 16, verse 17, and these signs shall follow those who believe. Again, those who is referring to the apostles, okay? Who believe in my name, they shall cast out demons, they will speak with new tongues, they will take up serpents, and if they drink anything deadly, it will by no means hurt them. They will lay hands on the sick, and they will recover. Verse 19, so then after the Lord had spoken to them, he was received up into heaven and sat down at the right hand of God. And they went out and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them, confirming the word through the accompanying signs. So the Lord was with them. In what sense? Well, we know it's not from, as he, upon this earth, he was with them physically, because now he has ascended back into heaven. But he still says, I am with you. Again, through the words that had been given, that Christ was there confirming those things on that he was with them, these miracles and such that they had to perform. But this statement, as far as that he's everywhere present, he was with them, is nothing new. Galatians chapter 1, verse 16. Paul says, to reveal his son in me. How was the son revealed in Paul?
In the word.
Through the word, through the things that he done, that Christ was with him. Ephesians 3 and verse 17, someone read.
Then Christ was made the
dwelling
in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love.
So we understand now from Paul's writing to the church at Ephesus how Christ dwells in us or is with us. It's through what? Our faith. And that's how it was, even though the apostles have been eyewitnesses of that, of his time here upon earth. They had seen the Christ, which you and I do have not, but we believe their testimony by our faith. And so in that sense, okay? Again, Jesus was human and divine. Okay, we need to keep that in mind, because when it talks about people seeing Jesus in a location, it's not having reference to his divine nature, but to his human nature. And we will deal with that a little bit later on. Any thoughts on Matthew 28, verse 20, that he's everywhere present? Not omnipresent. Matthew 26 and verse 11. Rose?
For you have the poor with you always, but me you do not have always.
Again, he said, you have the poor with you always, but you're not going to have me with you. In what reference, divine or physical, is he referring to? This physical body is what? It's going to be put in the grave, it's going to raise, and it's going to go back to the Father. So from the physical aspect, he is making this connection. That's where you say when you look at verses, you need to understand which context that he's talking about. Not trying to get too far ahead. A thought question, when Christ is talking, does he refer to himself more as the Son of Man or as the Son of God? I'd say which one does he refer to himself most to? His study party. Okay? But he refers to himself as both, just he uses one quite a bit more than he uses the other one. Okay? So in the physical sense, he's referring to his death. In verse 12, for in pulling out this fragment oil on my body, this physical body, she did it for my burial. So he's having reference to his physical body, not this divine nature. And so they take this verse and try to make, if you will, a contradiction where he says, lo, I'm with you always to the end of the world, but all of a sudden I'm not going to be there. And so we have that. Again, this was an act of preparing Jesus for his burial. And soon, this physical body would be no more, in which they honored him as far as the physical body. But the phrase, you have the poor with you always, points out how they should show kindness to him after his departure. He says, you have the poor with you always. Honor the poor. Take care of the poor. For in doing that, you're showing respect for me. because I'm going to depart this life physically and go back to the Father. Any thoughts on Matthew 26 and verse 11? John 5:13. Sure. Right. The one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn. Again, a multitude being in the place. Again, withdrawn himself physically from that aspect. Okay, not the divine, because his divine nature would have still known that, what was going on. It talks about he withdrew himself physically. A multitude being there could mean that why he withdrew himself or what means. That he used the crowd himself to disappear from the presence of those, whatever. Matthew chapter 12. And if we read verses 12 through 16.
Much more value then is a man than a sheep. Therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Then he said to the man, stretch out your hand, and he stretched it out, and it was restored as whole as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and plotted against him, how they might destroy him. But when Jesus knew it, he withdrew from there, and great multitudes followed him, and he healed them all. Yet he warned them not to make him known.
Again, this idea that Jesus withdrew himself from the physical aspect of the crowd. So we understand that what it's having reference to here, that he withdrew himself physically from that crowd. He was the Son of Man, which has reference to his physical life. John 11. Of course, we're all familiar with John 11. The chapter contains the death of Lazarus and his meeting with Martha and Mary there, and they're concerned that he'd be there, that their brother would not die, and so that's the aspect of that. When you look, someone read it, Mark 11, 15, or John 11, 15, excuse me.
And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him.
Right, the aspect he was not there. From the physical aspect, okay, that he was not there. When you go back to verse 4, you see, if you will, the divine nature also in this chapter. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of Man may be glorified through him. He talks about the sickness. Did Jesus know what the sickness was, even though he was not there? So, again, it's his divine nature, if you will. He goes on to say, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister, and Lazarus talks about it there. And he says, I'm glad for your sake that I was not there. Well, he was there in the divine nature, but not from the physical aspect to it. Because he tarried several days before he went there. But already knowing, when he makes the statement that Lazarus is dead, how did he know he was dead? Being the Son of Man, he was not there, but being the Son of God, he was. Again, this dual nature that sometimes, if you will, is hard for us to understand. In verse 14, he says, Lazarus is dead. So you have this twofold nature, if you will, of the divine and the physical aspect of who Christ was. He was the Son of God. He was the Son of Man. Any thoughts on that one? Is Christ blessed or cursed? He is blessed. Or he is blessed. Psalm 72. Excuse me. Again, I encourage you, when you look at these questions or these alleged contradictions, make it an effort or make it a habit, if you will, to get definitions of words. As we look at later on, a failure to understand the definition of word will mean that you have a failure to understand what a word or a scripture is talking about. Psalm 72 in verse 17, Larry.
His name shall endure forever. His name shall be continued as long as the sun. And the men shall be blessed in him. All nations shall call him blessed.
Again, this idea that all nations would be blessed in him, and be blessed by him, they would call him blessed. So the reference here, if you will, is having reference to Christ. When you look at this chapter, chapter 72 of Psalms is dealing with the reign of Christ. And Christ came, his reign. Blessed means, in this verse, an act of adoration or praise. And Strong defines this word. He talks about all nations shall call him blessed or praise him. He will be the source of blessings to all nations. You remember the statement back in Genesis chapter 12, in verse 3. Christ, in talking to Abram at that time, says, I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Again, this reference to the lineage of Abraham down through time, down through century, when Christ came into the world. At that time, all people would be blessed. And because of that, they would bless him who came. There was an interesting statement made in Psalms chapter 7. I wrote some stuff down. I'm trying to figure them right now, so let's bear with me. In Psalms chapter 72, I guess it would be words of encouragement or something to bolster us in our service to God. In Psalms 72, and verse 17, his name shall endure forever. His name shall continue as long as the sun. What do you think that phrase means?
As long as this earth stands, Christ's name will continue.
Is this?
It will end, but here it will continue.
Is this a blessing for us to know this, that his love is always going to be here until a point in time, that it's no longer? Well, sure, or it should be. Back in 72 and verse 5 of Psalms, they shall fear you as long as the sun and the moon endure. Again, this love, this fear that he's going to continue. The people who are not obedient to the gospel, they have reason to fear, or they should fear. And when that time comes, they only have one place they're going to end up. But people disregard such people that write this material and do away with, there's no heaven, there's no hell. But what a reality check it's going to be when they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of power. And by then, it's too late. I'm often reminded of the rich man. At what point in time did he realize where he was going to spend eternity? It was immediately at his death that he ended up in hell. So maybe you mentioned to it that he lifted his eyes and he talked and made a simple request on just a little bit of water to cool his tongue. It should be a sobering thought that this is a place we really do not want to go. Genesis chapter 22. Again, this blessed. In your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. You have the rule, if you will, of why one is going to be blessed or blessed. It's because of obedience. God's not going to bless us in any form, shape, or manner whatsoever without obedience. And it just renders total obedience. It's not a part-time obedience. But it's total obedience that we give totally our life to God. And through that, he has promised to never forsake us. Any thoughts upon Psalm 72? Revelation 5 and verse 12, Janie.
Satan with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing.
This chapter, I'm sure people have looked at it, been pointed out before. It talks about in verse 1, and I saw on the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll or a book written inside and on the back, sealed with 7 seals. This chapter is having reference to Christ, okay? Verse 3, and no one in heaven or on the earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll to look at. So I wept much because no one found worthy to open and read the scroll or to look at it. But one of the elders said to me, do not weep. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has prevailed to open the scroll. Again, your thoughts may be a little bit different than mine on what it's having reference to. To me, the scriptures, that we have those scriptures today, that they've been opened to us. And we have been blessed because one was worthy through his sacrifice to assume all authority and give us through the Holy Spirit this written word. Because we are blessed through that, we call him blessed, according to Psalms chapter 72 and verse 17.
You know something, CEO? It seems like the more that the word is available, the less people know it. They don't treat it like they used to. It's like the old word. Something so, you know, where it's a lot more scarce. So everybody has the Bible if they want it about it.
This is true. There'll be no excuse in judgment. You know, you can say, well, I didn't know, or I never said. Man is without excuse. Man has failed in his part to teach and preach the Word of God in this earth. We have numerous scriptures that refer to going to all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Was that accomplished during the early times of Christianity? Sure it was. Paul has reference to it in the book of Romans, that their voices or the message went to the end of the world. Right? If everybody had access at that time to the gospel, it's good news. What's happened today? When you look at Israel of old, they had those commandments given at Mount Sinai. And one of the greatest things, I know Larry's dealt with probably it, you teach your children, you teach your grandchildren. Each home was held responsible to prolong these commandments in the lives of their children. But what happened to Israel? Well, they failed to teach as they have been instructed, divinely instructed. Folks, we have failed to teach today. We got children that are lost, that are old enough, the age of accountability, to be Christians. We simply don't teach. We quit teaching. And so you see the churches of Christ dwindling in size, in spiritual growth, because we have failed to teach properly as we should. And because of that, if things don't change, you're going to stand before God in judgment, condemned. Because that is command that we go into all the world to preach the gospel to every creature. And so it should cause us to awake and realize we just wouldn't put here on this earth to come here and dress up pretty every Sunday morning and sing and go home with nothing else in our life. Our life, each daily life, is to be spreading the gospel. As those early church and the Christians were scattered everywhere and went and preaching the gospel. That is a daily law or something that we must do as we have opportunity to do so. So we need to keep these things in mind. Is Christ blessed or cursed? He's cursed. Galatians 3. Verse 13. Gina?
Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree.
Curse was something that was used in the Old Testament quite a bit. But according to Strong's, the word cursed, with the meaning that it means here, just appears three times in the New Testament. One of them is here, that Gina read. Cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree. Back up in verse 10. Cursed is everyone who does not continue in all things which are written in the book of law to do them. The idea is, why do you believe one was cursed under the old law? It's a penalty. You were considered, if you will, cursed. John chapter 7 is the other place that it is used. There John says, then the Pharisees answered them, are you deceived? 49, excuse me. Well, I'll go ahead and read. Have any of the rulers, the Pharisees, believed in him? Again, this is concerning Christ. But the crowd that does not know the law is accursed. Does not know the law. Why would they be accursed? They would fail to worship God, if you will, as they should have. So it's the meaning of this is the act of denouncing or something contesting. And so the application is applied to Christ in this. Back in Galatians chapter 3, and that's what Paul is dealing with here. He's talking about Christ. Christ has redeemed us from the law of the curse and become a curse for us. He says, for as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse, for it is written, cursed is every one. Again, this idea of being cursed is because of failure to keep a law. A lot of times they were put to death or other punishments, if you will. So it was the act of denouncing or something detested in reference to this meaning of how God the Father would have looked upon the Son, much like He would look upon those of the Old Testament because of their sins. It talks about as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse, because they fail to keep the law. And we point out several times the punishment should have been on those who did not keep the law. But God's love for them, as well as God's love for us today, that He sent His Son to be that curse, if you will, one detested or denounced. Hebrews chapter 10. But in those sacrifices, verse 3, there is a reminder of sin every year, for it is not possible that the blood of bulls and goats could take away sins. Again, they could not accomplish what Christ accomplished, if you will, upon the cross. Back in Galatians chapter 3. Again, we mentioned that Christ redeemed those under the law, became a curse or denounced or detested for them. And the curse of sin was the abandonment of God. Remember the statement that Christ made in Matthew chapter 27, verse 46? What did He ask the Father, or speak to the Father about? Huh? Yeah, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? In what sense? Because sin and God could not mix. That He forsook His Son. He denounced Him, that detest that was placed upon Him, this curse that was placed upon Christ. Isaiah chapter 53. We'll read a couple of verses and we'll stop there. Isaiah chapter 53. In verse 4. He is despised, rejected by man, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, and we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we did not esteem him. Again, this idea that he was despised, of how the Father looked upon the curse that hung upon the cross of Calvary. 2 Corinthians 5, and verse 21. For he who made him, who knew no sin, to be sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. This is something we should bless Christ for. Because he became accursed, or he became cursed upon the cross, he became sin for us, that we might become righteous to God through him. If you keep up in mind that the thought that Luke records in Acts chapter 22 and verse 23, this was all determined by the foreknowledge of God that this was going to happen. It was God's plan before the earth was ever created. Any thoughts? Again, he took the place of the accursed. For this, we are to bless him. Christ died as a criminal, and so came under the curse, as if he was a criminal. But he was a person who knew no sin, but he became sin for us. Any thoughts?